So we're recording. No, you have to tuck in this way. Yeah. It is weird. Let me tell you.
It's right in my face. Also, I'm afraid I'm like spitting a lot and there'll be a lot of the like.
So usually how I do my podcast is I just am thinking about something and then I'm like, yeah, this thing about Montessori matters, but why does it matter? And then I have to like go back to the Montessori book,
and did like, you already go look through at it. What books you recommend people read?
I've read all the ones I've recommended. I've read.
Okay,
there's some I've not read, or some I've read a little like parts of, but all the ones that I've recommended, I've read.
Okay,
there's. In the future, I'll probably recommend some that I haven't read.
Uh-huh.
Just because I know they're true. The things that are in them are true.
Sure.
So, yeah. Anyways.
Okay.
Any other questions before we start?
Have you read... This one is I got from Barnes & Noble. It's called How to Raise an Amazing Child the Montessori Way.
Yes.
It's mostly pictures, which is why I got
it. Yes. That's a good one because it gives you like visual representations of the things that you want to do with your child. So you can see it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I think a lot of Montessori is very visual, which is why I think the podcast is kind of an interesting choice because like so much of it is the environment and the specific materials.
Yeah.
That when you're like, it's hard to describe what Montessori is.
Right.
Just verbally.
Right. That's true.
That's what I've had a hard time explaining Montessori to other people.
Right. That's true. But there's so much philosophy and thought behind what you do. Like there's 10 different things to think about. It's like you want to teach your child how to wash their hands. But first you have to think about, like, okay, like what is this child has never washed their hands before. So... Like, A, how do I need to speak to my child in order, like, to be inviting and not bossy? Like, hey, you need to wash your hands. But why is this important? Or, like, and so you have to think about, okay, well, how do I make this interesting to my child? Why does this matter to my child? And, like, so then you would start out with, hey, look at your hands. What do they look like? And, like, the kid will usually say, oh, I've got pizza on my hands. Yeah. Well, let's. Mm. Do you want to wash your hands so we don't get that on our nice furniture? Mm-hmm. And like usually they'll say yes. So like that's like the start. Like you have to think about the invitation. And then you have to think about how it's laid out. Like Montessori always lays everything out, has always laid everything out left to right because everything isn't, she wanted to prepare them to read. Like everything is subtly preparing for everything else. So you want to think about laying out the sink left to right. So soap and then water in the middle, like a bowl of water in the middle, and then like nail scrubber or whatever that probably wouldn't be introduced until the child was getting good at actually like washing their hands. Mm-hmm. And then drying towel on the right. Mm. And then later on, like when they get good at doing the nail scrubber, then maybe put a thing of lotion on the right. They can put lotion on their hands. So. 'Cause you know, your hands get dry when you wash them.
Sure.
Yeah. So thinking about that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then thinking about, then you have to show them how to like restore this material. Oh, maybe we want a dry towel for the next person. So you would like show them everything and then let them do it through, but not correct them. Like you should never correct a child when they're doing it. Because
like
they
interrupt
can't
them in the
don't
middle of
interrupt
a task.
Them. Yeah, don't interrupt them. Mm. Because you have to kind of trust that they've seen this, they've absorbed, they have what Montessori calls the absorbent mind. Like they see everything in pictures, but they also can't register what they're seeing and what they're hearing. They can't register different senses at the same time. So like if they're listening to you talk, they're not seeing what you're doing.
So you like explain
so you don't
and demonstrate.
So for like 3 to 6 years old, You don't want to talk. You want to use as less words as possible when you're actually doing the thing that you want them to see how to do. So you would not say anything and you say, hey, let's wash your hands. I'm going to show you how, and then it will be your turn. And then you shut up and you do it all methodically. And a lot of times they'll try to interrupt and you just have to stop what you're doing. Don't move while you're talking so they don't miss a thing. And like would say, it's my turn. When I'm finished, it'll be your turn. Just reassure them. And then, so if you need to say something, you stop moving and then you keep going. And then, like, so you do it all the way through, but you want to make it short enough for their age, whatever age they are, that they can do it. You want to make it a long task for a 3-year-old that only a 6-year-old could do. So you have to think about that also, because you could do like a, oh, we're going to wash our hands, like scrub our nails, dry them off, then put the lotion on. That would all be too much for a 3-year-old. For a 3-year-old, you just want to do, this is how we apply the soap. This is how we wash it off. This is how we dry. That's the most essential things of like washing hands. And that's enough for a 3-year-old. And then for a 4-year-old, you might add the nail scrubber. For a 5-year-old, you'll add the lotion. You know, or whenever they're ready. That's the awesome thing about Montessori is whenever you see that they're ready for more, you give it to them. Sometimes it's longer for others and sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
So a lot of different things, like thinking about age, what their focus is, how to speak to them. Montessori like does not talk how like normal people talk in culture. Like they talk completely different to children.
Yeah.
So yeah, pictures are good, but also like all the thought that goes behind those pictures and those activities is really what I'm trying to do in the podcast, and not necessarily like I want you to go read the books. I think the books are the best, but I'm like here to get motivation for me and tell you what I love about Montessori, because that's keeping me going at this time in my life.
Yeah.
Whenever like I've had 5 kids in 7 years and I'm a little tired and burnt out, but I know I need to keep going and keep loving my children like this Montessori way. So yeah. Yes, so podcast is interesting, but I do try to put links on the podcast.
Okay.
If you can't find those, let me know, because I need to make those findable.
Okay, I have not even tried.
So, like, yeah, if you go on the actual podcast website, there should be, like, links. Like, okay. You can go to links where I'll link to the whatever book I reference. And also, I've made a few videos of the kids and them doing things and put them on there, okay. Like on YouTube. Cool. It's like attached to a YouTube channel.
So is that through Fireside?
Yeah, it's through Fireside.
Okay.
So, and I think you can also find it on Apple Podcasts. It goes down, it's like attached links that you can explore.
Okay.
And usually I reference, like, I'm trying to remember to say, I'm linking this in the mother of the podcast. I'm so new at this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
It's okay.
That's it.
Cool.
This podcast is powered by homeschoolbuyerscoop.org. The main question I've been getting recently with the COVID pandemic is, how can we start homeschooling? Some school districts aren't even opening up and they don't want to be at the mercy of an iPad or computer to do their schoolwork every day. So people are looking into homeschool options. One of those options is joining homeschoolbuyerscoop.org. They do the work for you of searching through the tens of thousands of options of curriculum, and they dial it down to 3 to 5 options of proven, tested, high-quality curriculum. They have over 260,000 families, so they use this membership to go to curriculum companies and say, hey, we want to buy this much of your curriculum, what's your discount you can give us for that? It's just like a bulk discount. It's your Sam's or Costco, but for homeschoolers. If you enter the code Montessori, when you sign up for your free membership, you get the Montessori Mom podcast discount of $5 on your first order. They are family owned and operated. They're homeschoolers themselves that decided, hey, we want the discounts that big schools, public school systems are getting. So how can we join together as homeschoolers and get discounts on curriculum? So check out homeschoolbuyersco-op.org.
Okay, so... ready to start?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey guys, welcome to Montessori Mom. I have a good friend here with me. Her name is
Katie. Katie Jara.
So Katie is, our husbands work together. They work at the same church. And Katie is interested in Montessori. Do you want to tell them why you're interested in Montessori?
Yeah. So I'm expecting my first in 2 months and learning about child development. Super fascinating to me right now. Actually, I was introduced to Montessori because my best friend is a Montessori guide at a school, Montessori school.
Okay.
And she taught me about it like before either of us ever got pregnant, you know, 3-4 years ago.
Okay.
And it was just like so interesting to me, but also kind of far off in my future. And I just thought, okay, I'll look into that like later.
When it's pertinent to my life.
But she was always like coming home from work so amazed by what she observed the kids to do. So anyway, when I got pregnant and she was also pregnant at the same time, I just like used her as a resource.
Nice. So she's your friend that like just had her baby last month. Okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
So her baby's like 2 weeks old right now.
Yay.
And so we're like kind of going through it together. Like, how is this going to look in our real lives?
Yeah.
Trying to like navigate that.
Yeah.
And you who've done it for years, I'm like, yeah, what does this really look like? Because I found like some blogs and YouTubers that do Montessori, like in Europe. It seems more popular there.
Yeah.
But it's like these people, just seems like unrealistic.
Right. That's the only Montessori blogs I've seen is that everything looks pristine and perfect. Yeah. And I'm like, that's not what my house looks like.
Yeah.
For one, I cannot design worth a crap.
Right. Like all the whitewashed furniture and like everything is so, I mean, obviously it's meant to be beautiful, but that's part of Montessori. But
yeah,
it's just like, well, like.
Well, obviously it's that like they are dedicated to this blog. So that's like probably how they're making their money right now too.
Yeah. Like they're.
So they're going to make it nice as they can. As beautiful and draw you in as much as they can.
Yeah. So. Especially like, yeah, with all like the newborn stuff, having like a newborn nursery. And it's just like, okay, what does that really look like if you're not a stay-at-home mom and you don't have a spare bedroom that you can fully dedicate to a child? And
yeah,
I don't know, stuff like that. So anyway, just kind of trying to absorb it. My husband and I doing a lot of reading. We read the Montessori book before we go to bed. Like sometimes to like wind down, we'll read like one chapter of Montessori.
Okay, so how does that work? Are you like, is one of you like reading out loud to the other?
Yeah, he's reading out loud to me.
Oh, nice. Okay. And you don't fall asleep during that?
No. If I get tired, I say, okay, we're done for the night.
Okay.
So, and we're not really, these chapters are really small. And so it's not too bad. But it is interesting.
Yeah.
And I want us to learn together.
Yeah.
Because I've learned a lot through my friend. And then I'll try and relay it to him. And sometimes it doesn't like come across and I don't really know it well enough to.
Yeah, it doesn't work if you've never experienced it. You're like, oh, there's this idea and I don't know much about it.
And everything is made of wood. It's great. Yeah.
And the children behave perfectly. That'd be amazing. We should do this.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, there's always this ideal. There's always an ideal. And like, I feel like very rarely is it hit.
Yeah.
But like that's life, like striving for the ideal in all of our, in all the different areas. So,
yeah.
Yeah, you got to have something to shoot for.
Yes. Well, and I just appreciate the Montessori philosophy of like the whole person. That it looks at like investing in an adult and a human being that will, you know, they'll grow up.
Yeah.
And I just feel like kids are a lot of times put in like a separate category and how we treat them.
Yeah.
And it just like, I don't know. It never really made sense to me. Like, why do we behave differently to them? You would never do that to another adult.
Yeah.
Not just in their intellect, but just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Some of the things, especially like the sensory experience of like kids' toys.
Yeah.
I'm like so, I myself am overwhelmed by.
Yeah.
Like anything with like buttons and lights and sounds and bright colors and like all the baby prints and stuff like that. It's just like
10 different colors in a 2 foot square area with like 15 like, different sounds and 10 buttons. And
the toy stores is like overload being in a toy store.
Yeah.
And I just like no wonder we all have like ADD. It's like, I just felt like you're like causing that by like overstimulating.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I just really like the simplicity of learning.
Yeah. I really wonder about that because, me and Edmund have talked about a lot. Like I get easily overwhelmed with the noise level in the house. And he's always just like, why can't you handle this? Like, they're like kids are normal. And like, I don't know. And he's like, maybe you're just like you get easily overstimulated with noise.
Hmm.
Well, that makes sense. Cause I kind of grew up, in silence and alone. Like I had three older brothers, but I was the smallest. I was a baby.
And a girl.
They kind of did their own thing. And the only girl. So maybe that's just what I'm used to. Mm. But yeah, I think it has a lot with how you're raised.
Mm.
I feel like, you know.
Yeah.
Nature versus nurture.
True.
It's true. So Katie called me the other day or texted me and said, hey, I listened to your podcast, but I have like so many more questions. So I feel like I've obviously not been thorough enough.
Yeah.
So,
Katie's very thorough.
Katie's going to come help me out. And she's gonna ask her questions.
Details.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And stop me if you've already covered this in your podcast.
No, we'll cover it again. Because obviously I didn't like cover it deep enough.
Okay.
And you can always explain it in a different way. Or
okay.
Yeah.
Well, this one maybe is like a backstory question a little bit more than directly Montessori, but what led to your decision to do homeschool and not put your kids in public school?
So that is not related to Montessori, even though Montessori is awesome. I mean, we could send our kids to Montessori school if we could afford it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure we could there's always a way to find, like to figure it out and afford it. But one moment. You okay, sissy? Sit down. Sit down. You wait for daddy. Okay. So my biggest reason for homeschooling personally, like Emin and I have our own reasons. It was a joint decision, but I grew up, like all of me and my brothers are in public school. I didn't know homeschool was even a possibility. And then like private Catholic school, those were only in Dallas, like 80 miles away from us. Like I grew up in a small town, so public school is the only option. And I did not know homeschool was a thing until high school. Whenever I had a friend who, he did motocross, raced dirt bikes, like all the time. So in order to be able to do that, his parents had to homeschool him because they were on the road racing all the time, like going to different races. So he would like, he liked having like a community. And when he was gone all the time, like it was just him and his dad or like him and one of his parents. So like he would take a year off of homeschooling to go to public school and like kind of spend time with everybody and his friends. And then the next year he'd go back to homeschool and like race really hard. But then he'd usually break something like 20 bones. And so he would like not be able to race for a couple of months. So they'd go back to public school for the next year while he healed.
Wow.
And
on crutches every year.
Yeah, seriously. Wow. Or like he had broken almost every bone in his hands and like broken a couple of bones in his legs, like at different times. But yeah, he was on crutches a lot. So anyways, I didn't know it was a thing until high school, but I grew up just everybody's separated doing their own thing, right? Like mom and dad are at work and each of the different kids are in their own grades. So like you're apart for 8 hours of the day and then you come back home for 2 hours in the evening and you're expected to like get along like you've worked on your relationship all day and like spend time together and like it's just hard to and then but it didn't ever sorry there's so many thoughts and I've explained this so many times and I think it's been a long week. So basically everybody's separated and you don't really have that much of a relationship with each other. Like, you know, you get the weekends, mm-hmm. you know, that's, so that's what 25%, 20% of the week
mm-hmm.
you get. What's 2 divided by 7? What is that? It's like under 20%, like the time you get together.
It's less than 20%.
Yeah. So we each all have our own friends. Like we're not friends with each other at home. Like we each have our own friends that are in our own school. And like, I mean, at least my parents like had each other because they work together, owning a business. But like if your parents don't have that, then they're each at their separate workspaces and everybody's just separated all day. And, it's just rough. Like we weren't friends with each other and me and my brother was closest to me. Like we fought all the time. And so I just feel like I grew up with this spirit of like separateness and aloneness. And I didn't want that for our family. Like I want us to, it's kind of like Mother Teresa says, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family. Like I want us to be together and be friends first, like family and friends first, like be able to love each other. You have to be able to love your family to be able to love anybody else and like love the world. That's the hardest thing to do is love your family. So you don't get to choose them, right? So like that's my biggest reason for homeschooling. I think it can be better than public school. And like that's a whole probably another issue. But that's my biggest reason. Edmund thinks he can do better than public school. That's why he wants to homeschool, right? Is that your reason? The reason you want to homeschool is because you think we can do better than public school. Yeah. So. Same amount of work in a shorter period of time. You can control the curriculum. They can be a piano master by 10 if they want to be. You know, they get to choose. Like, all these, you know, you hear of all these people that, like, do, like, awesome things by the time they're 20. Like, if you're famous, you're famous by your early 20s. Yeah, we talked about that a lot. Like, there's a lot of people, like, in pop culture. Like, by the time they're in their 20s, they're already, like, they have a career. Who? Everybody. It isn't true at all? That's what you were telling me the other day.
What? I never said that.
Yeah, you did.
I've never said that. If you're famous, you're famous before you're
20. By the time you're 20. Early 20s.
He's backing out.
Now. He is backing out. He's backing out of his statement.
I would say that's probably true for a lot of like young, celebrity, young child like, maybe. You know, singers, actors.
All yeah.
Actors though, don't get their start till their 30s or 40s.
No. Maybe.
Like they but, don't get their big break until later in life. Yeah.
Me and Katie disagree. We're agreeing with each other.
We were of the same mind as you were like a week ago when you said this.
Yeah, so, but the reason that they have success, the reason people have success at a young age, basically, is because they've, like, had the time to work on it. You know, like, they haven't been, a lot of them, I've heard of a lot of people, it's like, well, how did they get to do this? Like, I was in school all day. Well, they were homeschooled.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they did.
They could pursue their interests.
They could pursue it. Yeah. So, there's just a lot of opportunity. Like, gives a lot of opportunity, you know, on... For Edmund's reasons. My reasons. I just want us to like each other. So, which probably should start with me to stop yelling at my children. So, yeah. Yeah, non-Montessori related, but that's our reasoning. And, like, Montessori is, like, we do a lot of Montessori things, but, like, I think I've said this before, but I want to reiterate it. Like, I don't want this podcast to be like, this is what a school, Montessori school is like, because I've stepped foot in a Montessori school a few times and like got the tour and like see things work. And we do Catechesis of the Good Shepherd, which is Montessori based. Like I lead that, which is Montessori based religious education. So I've had a lot of experience with that, which is awesome. So I've had a little bit of that experience, but I have yet to meet a mother that has been able to recreate the Montessori school experience at home. And not that that, I don't think that's necessarily, like, I don't think it's necessary to raise a whole healthy child, you know, that's successful, you know, spiritually and physically. So, yeah, that's the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I think everybody has different reasons for doing homeschool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I have seriously considered it more and more in becoming pregnant. Just realizing, like, more of, like, the culture they'll be exposed to.
Yeah, you don't have control.
Just, like, you know, like, how do I teach them how to be in the culture but not, like, a part of it, you know, like, not of the
not
culture.
Not be controlled by it, really.
And, like, be able to teach them, you know, what is good and what is holy and pure without, you know, yeah. So,
yeah,
my instinct is just, like, isolate them from that, you know. But obviously you can't control everything.
No, you can't. Like, I think we should all, like, you have a duty as a parent to, maybe control the timing of, like, when they're exposed. Like, they're going to be exposed at some point, but you, like, should prepare them for that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're not going to be, there's certain things they're not going to be ready for when they're 7, and but they might be by the time they're 12, you know? So you can't, yeah, you can't control that whenever they're in a public school setting as much. So I've even heard there's a lot of, just speaking with other parents, a lot of times Catholic schools are, they're like, it's the same as public school. Like, they're still exposed because, I mean.
Yeah, there's other kids. You don't know what the other kids say.
Yeah, and a lot of people send their
adults
kids to Catholic school just because it's a good education, not necessarily because they're Catholic or they're there for moral reasons. Mm. It's just for quality of education.
True.
Book education.
True.
So.
I wrote down some of my other questions.
Okay.
Okay. This kind of goes with your unity in the family about homeschooling.
Yeah.
I've mentioned the child size table and chairs for eating dinner to other people. And some people seem really concerned about, like, community of the family if the child is, like, in a separate table.
Yeah.
By themselves. There's some people who have said, like, just that's more isolating to put them in a different place.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, are you concerned at all about, like, a lack of community with, like, one child sitting by themselves? Is it, like,
so
is
we
it
have
really,
like, they're not always, they don't usually eat dinner by themselves at their table. Like, we have a high chair that either you can, like, put a tray on it or you can scoot them up to the table and they can share the table too. We usually have at least one meal together a day when we're doing good. So, like, we try to do that and sometimes we fail, but usually, like, for that, maybe they'll eat breakfast there or lunch or a snack, but we usually have, like, the meal that we have all together. Everybody's at the table. We have to put the baby in the high chair and they're up there with us too or sitting on somebody's lap. So it's not like they don't have to eat at that every time they eat a meal, mm-hmm. but it's just that they have, like, practice doing that, like, practice at the table and practice sitting up and, like, holding their own stuff, like, balancing on their own feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Using a real cup, like, they can spill it on themselves there and it's not that big of a deal. It's a little bit bigger of a deal if they spill it at the family table, but on everybody's food. But anyways, yeah, so. For us, they don't eat there all the time. I feel like I felt that way when I first saw it too. Like, oh my gosh, they're never joining the family. But that's not the case, at least with us. Like, we don't.
Do you eat at the same time as your children or do you feed them and then you eat later?
We always eat at the same time because, like, it's not a family meal if you're not all sitting down together. But it's important also that you're eating the same thing. Like, they're seeing you. Kids that see their parents eating that are going to be like, oh yeah, That is, like, we should eat this. They're eating this. They're not like, why are you feeding me this crappy food and you're eating that food or whatever? So.
Yeah. Then you can model.
Yeah, you model.
The diet.
Yeah. How to eat also and what you're eating.
Like, did you ever feed your kids baby food?
I did for the first two. And then by the third, I ran out of energy to do that. So baby food became beans, whole baked beans. They are mushy and they can pick them up themselves.
There you go. High protein.
So, but I always like made the baby food myself. I mean, you can do baby food that's like fits in a spoon that's mush, that's not in a can. Like a lot of times I'd make mashed potatoes. We just always have mashed potatoes. And a lot of times that's what the baby would eat. But I've learned now that once they can like, pretty quickly, like around 5 or 6 months, they can, if something's not going down right, they can get it back up. And that's kind of when we start giving them bits of whatever we're having at the table. Because actually, the research I've seen is that babies don't actually digest solid food and get nutrition out of it till they're about 1 year old. Mm. So it's primarily a social and sensorial experience until then. It's not necessary. Like, all they need is milk proteins until then to survive physically. But it is good to give them that sensorial experience. They're already getting, you know, taste buds developed, and they're tasting things and seeing what everybody else eats. So we'll just give them, like, bits and pieces. I don't think Kateri really ate a whole lot until she was this. So she's number five for us. I don't remember giving her much till she was like 8 months old. And before, I started much sooner.
Yeah.
At least with number one, because he was on formula and I couldn't nurse him. Didn't work out. So I was trying to get him off of formula as soon as possible. I didn't realize at that point, like with him, that he wasn't like, that solid food wasn't actually going to give him nutrition.
Mm.
Even though he was super fat anyway, so... yeah,
wasn't reflective in his weight.
No, it wasn't. He was that formula man. It bulks you up. Of course, apparently I make heavy cream anyways because all my babies are fat.
Hey, big baby's a healthy baby.
That's so true. They got weight to lose if they get sick. They got some fat to live off of. So
nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so many more questions.
Okay,
they might seem shoot random. Them. So number like top three questions I get while pregnant is about the nursery. Mm. Everybody wants to know like what the theme is and if I have everything set up and ready. And so I've done nothing until this weekend, actually.
Yeah.
I started like cleaning a little bit, but, okay. I'm preparing the nursery now. It's not really a nursery. It's our guest bedroom.
Okay.
I don't really want to
move. So you're going to do that? You're going to put it in the guest bedroom? I thought you were going to leave that free for your.
What I want to do is co-sleep with the baby for some period of time.
Right.
In our bed. And then I have a bassinet that's on wheels.
Okay. Right.
That one. The baby will sleep in the bassinet, like, in our room.
Okay.
Then, like,
I love those,
at some point.
You can roll them to wherever you're at.
Yeah.
They're amazing.
At some point, we'll move the baby into their own room. But right now, it's sort of like baby storage.
Right. You got to put it somewhere. All that stuff.
It's so much stuff.
Even anyway. If you, like, don't, even if you only get the essentials.
Right.
It's still a lot.
It's still, like, my garage is full of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's insane. I have thought maybe I'll put like a mattress or a crib in there or something like when the baby's going to take a nap, but the baby can take a nap in the bassinet. I don't know.
Yeah, it's got wheels. You can roll her anywhere. You can put her in the pantry.
Him.
Gosh, it's a boy. Dang it. I keep saying that because I've like, this is my first girl that I have out of four boys.
In the girls
I don't
mode.
Know. Listen. Okay, guys. So we had Katie's baby shower today and there's this bingo thing. And you're supposed to guess what is in the gifts. And then, like, If it comes out, like, you put a dot on your bingo thing, the first one that wins it gets something. And I'm putting dress, bows. And I knew she was having a boy, but I have, like, girls on the brain because I finally, yeah, after four boys, got a girl.
Nice.
So I'm, like, all dresses and bows right now. I'm, yeah, loving it. And I apparently am projecting that onto every other pregnancy.
Yeah. All pregnancies currently are girls. That's funny.
Yeah.
So a lot of people seem, like, really personally, yeah, offended that I'm not having a nursery. They're, like, really shocked by it.
People are usually offended that you're doing something different than they are.
Yeah.
Which is, I feel like, is, that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Like, we're allowed, like, to do different things.
Unheard of. Like, I'm like, the baby can't even see color for, like, a while, you, yeah, know, for a few weeks or months. And, like, the baby won't be able to read the quote on the wall.
Like,
that's for me.
That you've painted in cursive. They're not going to be able to read, yeah, till they're five.
Like, that's, it's for six. Me then. If I'm doing it, it's not for the baby, it's for me. And, like,
if you don't like to do that or you don't need that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do it?
And if I move, I have to paint over it.
Mm.
So just keeping it neutral.
Yeah.
Or if we have guests over, because it's a guest bedroom. Like, yeah, is it going to have Winnie the Pooh guest bedroom? Anyway. So no nursery. But it will probably become, like, the toddler's room when he's ready to be in his own. Maybe after a year or so. I don't know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you sleep easy. You're not like me. I needed the baby out of the room.
Yeah.
It's like by the probably seven, at least by 7 or 8 months, because I just couldn't sleep through the wrestling.
Yeah.
Just, I have they would such stir. A light sleeper. Yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Eben sleeps through everything. She could still be in our room. He just would
maybe
not
it's a
even.
Mother thing.
It got worse. I feel like it gets worse for me when my hormones change. Like, kind of my, and so I wouldn't say I have insomnia per se, but definitely on that spectrum. I just have a hard time sleeping.
Yeah.
Anyways, sorry. Keep going. No nursery.
Starting to look at the closet, though, I was like, how do I want to organize the closet? And I would really love to have it to where the baby can take care of themselves, dress themselves, yeah, when the time comes. So I wanted to ask you, do you hang your children's clothes? And also, at what stage were they, like, dressing themselves? And, like, how did you introduce them getting themselves ready? Like, what tools did you use to, like, bring that?
So it starts around 18 months, like, them getting interested in dressing themselves. So, like, you would help them pick out clothes. And so you only have, like, their, so you'd have something that's on their level that they can get out, and only, like, a few options. Like, you would have, you don't even have to have, like, a dresser. Just have a basket of, here's your shirt, here's your shorts, and here's your underwear, right? And, like, well, you should probably do whatever order you put their clothes on. Underwear, shorts, shirt. That's easiest. Because the shirt gets in the way when you're putting your shorts on. All these little details you have to think about with kids, because they're just, like, they don't have the hand dexterity, yet they're working on it, right? Mm-hmm. So every little bit, like, the easier you can make it, then the more satisfied they will be with their material, their work, whatever, getting dressed, whatever it is. So, like, with a lot of my kids, I didn't have a dresser or anything. So I just have, like, three baskets on the ground with underwear, shorts, t-shirt, and then, like, just two of each. And they get to pick which underwear do you want, and we put that on, which shorts do you want.
Like, in the basket, you only had two options.
Right.
What do you do with the rest of the clothes?
I just put them up a level higher where they can't reach, you can't see them.
Okay.
So, like, you want it to look neat so they don't, like, get that messy in the picture of their mind. Which is really difficult for me. I'm not the neatest person, but I'm a lot better than I used to be. I've been working on it. You have the three baskets of clothes, which is two options each. And then when they get up in the morning, show them, like, where it is, you know, what's in here. And then you want them to pick it up to, like, pick. Like, you, so if you want to make it theirs and them to do it, you want them to do as much as possible, like them to touch it as much as possible. And then you always want to show them beside them, or like for putting on clothes, you would get them in front of you so that they can see how your hands are like around the underwear waistband in order to put them on. So like you don't want to do something facing them because they're seeing it backwards, mm-hmm. and like not how their hands are. Like they don't, so they can't, they don't know. They don't get it. They don't understand. But if you like show them how their hands would be reaching out, like reach their hands out in front of them, grab the underwear, the shorts, and like how to put them on. And then there's lots of videos and like books with different demonstrations, like how to show them how to get their shirt on, get their jacket on, like by themselves, like for their jacket, like lay it out, like front side up on the floor, and then get their arm, like have them come around backwards by the hood and slide their arms in, and they flip it up over their head and like put their arms up in a Y, and then it like slides right on. Hmm. And then if you want to show them how to do their zipper, don't face them and do it. Come around behind them and show them how your fingers and hands are so they can see it. And then, you know, and then let them like undo it and let them try. So like a lot of Montessori is taking the time to show them and then let them do it. Like if you're not saying this is how you do it and you don't let them try, or you move on with your day, like they're not gonna, they haven't done it. So they're not gonna know, they haven't tried themselves. It's just like, I mean, it's just like riding a bike. You know, if you're like, oh, get on a bike and you show, so this is how you ride a bike. And you get off and you're like, there you go. You know how to ride a bike now. Would you know if you never rode a bike? You wouldn't know how to ride a bike. Like you've got to practice, like you've got to figure it out. And so that's like a lot of Montessori's basis is show them, let them do it immediately. So, because doing it is what is when the learning happens, is when you do it yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's kind of the closed thing. Did I have any other questions about that? Yeah. So I have like their stuff low where they can reach it. And then like on a shelf or two above, I have everything else. So you'd have like your own bins of their shirts and shorts. And then you just put them down on their level.
So you never even did like a dresser with the drawers you pull out.
Once they get older. Yeah. Like they can do that like around three or four. You can start doing the dresser and like hanging the clothes is... I don't know. She always said hanging clothes is easier than folding, but my kids fold better than they hang. I don't know why they don't like hanging. I think the notches and the top of the, how our hangers are, like they have the notches to like kind of stick the clothes on so they don't slide off.
Yeah.
That messes with them. And then it catches the sides of the clothes and I like, then they're done. Like my 4-year-old thinks that the edge of his, the collar has to go in those notches or it's not hung right. So, and I can't find little, for some reason, I know there exist, but I can't find little hangers without those notches on the top. It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
So I'm like, this is so easy, but he would rather fold them than do that because it's just that's too much. Folding's easier. Also for when they start folding, for all of you people out there, all of you moms, whether you do Montessori or not, I just found folding boards. Yeah, I'd never heard of it either.
What is a folding board?
It's basically like 6 pieces of plastic or I tape together like sections of cardboard and you lay the shirt out on it. You obviously have not seen Marie Kondo.
Yeah. This is the same thing.
Yeah, she used it like, I thought she used a folding board.
No,
she doesn't. She just folds it by hand. She takes 5 minutes to fold one shirt by hand. Okay, so you lay this out on a folding board and you do like 3 different flips and it's like folded nicely. And like you cut the cardboard to whatever size you want your shirt folded or your shorts folded. And you just like left, so you're using this now. Up. Yes, I even use it for me. It makes it look so nice and they all fit nicely. Like whatever size I want. I've got the kid size. I've got Kateri's clothes size, like baby sized. And then our adult size for what our drawers are.
Wow.
Yeah.
And changed your life.
They change. Yes. They do not complain about folding their clothes anymore. I'm like, dude, use this. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is so great. Yeah, I'll fold my clothes.
Wow.
you know, they did that for a while. You were kind of back to like, oh, I don't want to fold my clothes, but it's not as hard now.
Okay.
Now they, it's like, that's a lot easier. Goes quicker.
When did you start teaching them to fold their clothes?
I start with around 3.
Okay.
So 3 is like a lot. Like you sit there and do it with them, especially if it's a week's worth of clothes. But Maria Montessori would say you would leave out their unfolded clothes in the folding board, like at a little like station or whatever place in their room. And then if they see the clothes and they want to fold clothes, they can go fold clothes and put them in their drawer. Mm. That's the ideal way to do it. My house isn't that big. So we have limited space.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And we also have 5 very young children and kind of have to operate. So we kind of do it all together. It comes out of the dryer. Like they put it in the washer and then they put it in the dryer. I sort it out to their baskets. And then we all, like I kind of go around and help. We all fold together and then put it all away. So, yeah.
Okay. So what would you recommend? Like setting up the nursery, it seems like you don't really have to consider them like putting away their clothes in a specific spot for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's functional for me until they're ready.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
And then
you just need to set it up however it works. Yeah, for
and
you.
Then like you just need a space for 3 baskets on the floor to hold like the basics for them when they start. And then also so it's like you would put these 3 baskets out and then a mirror by it so they can see the result. They can see mm-hmm. the difference in them and their pajamas or their diaper and then them dressed. And then like they like have like a little table with like just a brush or comb. They can comb their hair and finish it off. So my kids love, even up to 5, they're like just looking in the mirror and combing their hair.
Wow.
Just combing their hair.
Just going
like,
to town.
Making it different. Like. Yeah. Granted, it's not all the time. Like, they'll just randomly one day they're in there just, like, making different shapes with their hair, with the comb. Like, so, yeah.
Wow.
I don't know how Montessori, like, routines are or rules because, like, they're, unless it's a Saturday morning and we're trying to sleep in and we put cartoons on because we do that. Although Edmund chooses cartoons, I would rather choose like some documentary that they're all into, like Blue Planet, because yeah. they actually all watch that and it's super cool. But like they are not supposed to come. All of our bedrooms are upstairs. It's different in a different house, but for this house, because we move all the time, they're not supposed to come downstairs until their bed is made and their room's cleaned and they are like dressed for the day, which you could add all kinds of stuff in there, like comb your hair, brush your teeth, whatever. I should really get on the brushing your teeth thing. Right now, it's only before bed. Half the week.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how Montessori that is. I really haven't thought about that too much. It's just that, like, this is... I'm done with people being downstairs in their underwear. Because boys would never be dressed if they didn't have to be.
Yeah. Just naked all the time.
Naked all of the time. Like, they'll... My 4-year-old will walk out the front door and go to the end of the sidewalk and pull his pants down to his ankles. And he's like peeing in sight of 15 different houses. I'm just like, somebody is going to call CPS on me. Like, get in the house, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Man, peeing outside is a thing with boys. Whew.
Yeah. I think my husband just would encourage do it once. That.
Yeah. It's.
I think he's excited about it, actually.
It's great, but it's a little embarrassing when they're, like, doing it in front of the neighborhood.
Yeah. Like, at least keep it in the backyard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, now we're, like, not even just stop doing it in the backyard because you're peeing where we're walking. You're not. Like, we're just like.
Not even going in, like, a discreet location.
I've always had a rule. Like, you go to the back fence.
Okay.
You know, and then we had to work on like, you don't pull your pants down to your ankles, like, you know, just over your business. Like, you leave it up over the back. Yeah. You just pull it down over the front.
You don't have to come all the way off.
Yeah. And now we're still working on that.
I feel like those are very realistic expectations.
Yeah. But it's, dude, it's hard.
Oh, man.
Small steps, small successes. We have an ideal with the peeing thing, and it's not, we're not there yet.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
This is my future. Yeah. My husband right now will pee outside in the backyard, like on the house.
He's and marking his territory.
He does. That's what he says. Like, and it's always you like know when what? We come home from vacation too. It's like he needs to like establish his like, this is like, we're back at the house. And now I need to go. And like, in case anything's like happened while I was gone.
I really think my dad used to do that too. I really, now I'm having flashbacks of like pulling up at dark. And the only like being in the car, the headlights on, and dad's going around the side of the house. Like, and I don't think I knew what he was doing for a long time. Like, is he checking for robbers?
Yeah.
Like, what's, you know, there's no windows on that side of the house. But you know what? Maybe it's good pest control, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He'll do it too if we ever like have another dog over at the house. Like, if we have a friend that brings a dog. Like he'll like after the dog is left, he'll like go to the spots where the dog peed and like pee on those spots.
Why does he think it'll really matter?
I don't know. I'm like, it's not like there's other dogs that are gonna come in our backyard and like
try to mark over that spot too.
Yeah, it's a gated backyard, so I don't know. I don't understand it. I don't pretend to understand it. I think it's gross, but
yeah, you know what, if there are any men listening, they're probably like, yeah. That's a, you should do that.
I do it too.
That is a, like, nobody should not do that.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see. I'll be outnumbered with the boys. So
yeah,
I'm just learning as I go along. So you mentioned.
And you have two sisters.
Yes.
You don't have any brothers.
And my dad has only sisters and my mom has only
girls
sisters.
Girls is definitely, remember this, girls is a thing in your family. So, because this is the first boy in, like, how many years?
Well, I'm the first grandchild on my mom's side. So, okay. There's no young boys on that side.
Okay.
At all. On Tim's side, there's one other grandchild. And he's, like, 8 now.
Okay.
So, the, like, baby boy is new. But I wasn't, like, involved in raising him.
Yeah.
We just got married 2 years ago. So it wasn't like my nephew when he was a baby, you know?
Right. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Man, we're going all different directions with this.
Yeah. It's random. Yeah. Okay. More questions. So one of the things I love about Montessori is like not overstimulating the child.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of like media is way overstimulating.
Yeah.
And it shocks me sometimes when you see like young kids, even babies, using their parents' phones, smartphones.
They're so attracted to
tablets.
Them. It's like bugs to a light. I mean, it is a light.
I mean,
but
I'm attracted to my phone.
I know.
I'm the same way. So I can only imagine like a 1-year-old's brain watching or playing a game or whatever.
Yeah. I wonder if it's like eating sugar for them. I mean, oh, it is. I'm pretty sure it is. Like the same. No, I remember research about this. It activates the same parts of the brain that sugar does. And well, I mean, sure. I mean, the addiction part of the brain, basically. I mean, if it's sugar, crack, any type of addictive drug, like, yeah it activates that part of the drain.
Yeah.
Brain for like adults, children, everything, everybody.
So what do you do to regulate this? I mean, I'm sure this is a common like mommy topic of like,
well,
how do you control screen time?
We don't have cable. And yeah, the media is very busy. So like, I don't like them watching cable. Like even if like my parents have cable and actually in PBS there isn't any commercials. So usually if they turn anything on for them, it's PBS. But I like our we just have like a smart TV with apps. So there's no commercials. Like they watch a show straight through and then we turn it off. And that's like a complete activity. If they get up during the middle of it, I turn it off. Because I mean, We didn't do TV at all until the oldest was 3. whenever I was super morning sick with the fourth. And I just needed, like, something to get through till Edmund got home for them to, like, not
didn't even turn on the
kill
TV.
Themselves. We didn't have a TV. I turned on my computer for them because I was, like, that desperate for them to, like, I just couldn't. I literally couldn't get off the couch. I needed them to, like, sit still and not, like, destroy themselves or anything else. And then my in-laws got us a smart TV, like, this big smart TV, which was... My husband was so excited about, but so like that's kind of the only thing we have regulated. They don't get to do anything else. I mean, since we've done homeschooling, like they get on my computer to do typing lessons, and that's it. But the TV is like, yeah, it's definitely regulated. We hide the controller actually, because the oldest, when he was six, was getting up at 2 a.m. and watching TV all night. And then like we didn't know it, he would turn it off and go back to bed when it was like starting to get daylight.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And then I was like, why? Like it's like for like a couple of weeks I was like, why is Ignatius sleeping until like 11 a.m. he's usually up at 7, and like he was up first. And then I woke up in the middle of the night one night and heard this noise, and I'm thinking there's somebody in our house. And come downstairs, and it's him watching TV. And that's what he had been doing to make him sleep in. So we had to start hiding the controller.
Wow.
But yeah, it is really addictive because he would just do it all night long. And then, so when he started finding the controller, we just put it in our bedroom. And we would catch him sneaking across the floor in our bedroom. It was like, yeah, it was serious. It was like an addiction. He was doing every, he was crawling into the devil's lair to get to what he wanted. Wow. Like,
yeah.
So it's kind of scary waking up with this like toddler that looks like an animal, like in an animal crouch on the floor.
Stealth
mode. Yeah. Trying to like get, like I've woken up before and his hand is like a foot away from the controller, reaching out on my nightstand to come get it.
Busted.
Yeah. So we had to put some serious consequences in place for that.
Did you take the batteries out and put the batteries in a different spot?
We did that at 1.2. Yeah, it was about like a half a year. It was about a 6-month struggle. And then he got out of it. And we broke him somehow.
Amazing.
So, you know, potty training for TV. So, yeah, regulation of screens. They don't have any.
No personal devices.
No personal devices at all. Sometimes, like, if the kids will ask to, like, take a picture on my phone, and I'm like, okay, like, develop your photography skills. Sure, like, you can do that. You know, you can do that. Sometimes I want to take videos. Like, rarely I'll let them do that. Our 5-year-old is kind of, he likes looking at the maps. Super into that. Like, seeing where all the buildings are and stuff. I'm like, okay, that's kind of educational. You're learning how to use a phone, which I think they should learn how to use technology. Like, I don't think it's like, oh my gosh, they don't need to use anything until they're 15, because that's just, I feel like that's crippling them. You know, they're not, because you need to learn. Technology is good. And we all have to, like, hit the medium between too much and too little.
Well, and a lot of schools are introducing more and more technology for education. Like the local high school issues iPads to every single student.
Yeah.
Starting freshman year.
I mean, I get it. They want, like Maria Montessori says, like they need to be oriented to the culture. But at the same time, like you also have to think about, well, how do we learn best? A lot of research is saying that we learn best reading in a book, writing with our hands, not typing, things like that. I haven't looked into it. So I can't comment on the reliability. That's the word I'm looking for. The reliability of that research. I know a lot of it's saying that, but they only get to watch TV every now and then. So I mean, we'll go a week without watching TV sometimes. But if I'm like get pregnant, they're probably going to be watching TV for a month. So yeah, but that's all we really do is TV. I was really surprised whenever, because the kids were in a Montessori preschool for about a year and a half, and they were like had this iPad, and I forget what it's called. It was like some certain type of iPad that had like, you know, quote, educational games. Well, I was like watching them do these games. I'm like, this doesn't look educational at all to me. Like, you're just pushing buttons. You're not learning math facts. You're not like tracing letters. It's not. I was a little disappointed in that. Because they were just kind of letting them be on it at the end of school. And then they wanted to send it home. And I was like, the kids were getting to like have a weekend at home with this. And I was like, no. Like, you don't you think you need to ask this parent whether or not they would allow an iPad at home? Like, they're no. I don't want that. That's not what I want for my children. So there's many reasons. Like, I don't, they were one of the schools that I think I've talked about this before with a previous podcast with Edmund, that some Montessori schools say they're Montessori, but they don't necessarily.
Right. The name is not copyrighted.
Right. Yeah.
So anybody can say Montessori without following any kind of.
Yeah. And there's not like, I don't think there's a whole lot of like strict, like the association, like the American Montessori Association is probably not coming in. There's a couple different ones and I don't know the differences and like what's better and what's not. And they said they were accredited, but there's nobody coming in to check on them of like, are you doing things like according to this philosophy and methodology? So, and I just think they just also were undercutting parental authority in many ways. I didn't appreciate that. So
your oldest is 8, 9?
Old 7. Just turned 7. So 7, 6, 5, 4, and 1. Yeah.
Do you think you have an age when you would start introducing more technology for him to learn?
In the last year, when he was 6 and that our other one was 5, number 2 is 5, we've been doing typing lessons on the computer and letting him get on the maps and the phone and do like pictures and videos. So our biggest fear is not necessarily like technology per se, but the internet.
Right. Sure.
So that's an even bigger fear then. But yeah, I mean, blue light and screens and developing eyes, and that's all an unknown also.
Sure.
But we just like, you learn better through the senses, and like you're only being visually stimulated on the phone. So, what? According to Montessori.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Also with the addiction stuff. It's kind of scary.
Yeah.
So, I mean, adults are addicted too. Like, we can get addicted too. And the child has that much less self-control, you know, to regulate.
Or even knowing, like being aware that,
what's going on. They just know they want it. They don't know why, and they're that like determined and upset about it. They don't understand, you know, that too much is bad.
So another thing I've come across explaining Montessori to other people is, so I intend to go back to work after my maternity leave. And I would love to do more Montessori at home, but there's going to be someone else, probably a mom or mom-in-law, that is taking care of the child. And so I'm just not sure how much they will like abide by, and, you know, because they have their own ideas of how to raise a child. So how have you... I guess, how have you handled other people? Like, if your child is like with a babysitter, or you leave them with your parents or something for a time, what do you, like, how much have you explained about Montessori and you like request that they utilize that, those methods?
Well, I've talked about it a lot. Me and my mom are really good friends. So like, I've talked to her a lot about it. I feel like that's the first step, is just like communication, you know, and not necessarily like not coming at it from a bossy, like, this is the only way to do child rearing, and, like, you know, not bashing other ways or bashing that, but just saying, like, the beauty and the goodness of it. And I think I'm fortunate with my mom. She was exposed to Catechesis of the Good Shepherd, which is like a Montessori approach to religion, before I had kids. So she was a little bit exposed to it. But no, I would just talk about it all the time. I think I said that in my first episode, like, starting this, because my family is tired of hearing me talk about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, just talking about it. Oh my gosh, I read this about this, and, like, I'm so excited about, you know, raising my child this way and, like, doing this, and just, like, coming at it from, like, this is awesome and, like, this is good, and, like, just talking to them about the goodness. And they will get that message, you know. And I feel like if they respect it all, like, that this is your child and you get to decide how to raise them, that they'll try to cater to that, you know. And they'll always be a mix. Like, I feel like whenever you're trying to, like, be different than the culture, like, there'll always be some type of, oh yeah, this is good in this ways, I just worry about this or whatever. Also, you could be the one to buy the things that furnish their house. Like, buy the baby things yourself, and then it's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then you provide the materials you want them to use.
Right.
Yeah.
So are they coming to your house, or are you taking them to their house?
I don't know. I guess I would like for them to be at my house, because then the environment
is would be the how same. You want it. Yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't have to have two of everything also.
Yeah. But I guess it's really a convenience thing also. You know, if you have a family member that's going to step up and help you, then...
Yeah, you can't be picky.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't want to be a brat about it.
That's right.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, and maybe it's just because this is my first, that are just like, oh, you don't know anything. So I'm like, well, yeah, I don't know anything.
But I have a brain.
But I still, like, there's a lot of people actually have said, like, you can't do it. Like, this Montessori thing seems too different, and you're not going to be able to do it. So, like, just don't even try is kind of like what it comes across.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah, it really is. Like, especially
sad, like, viewpoint.
I'm still learning about it, so I don't feel like I can defend it really well.
Right.
So if they, like, counter me with a question, I'm like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Because I'm not, like, fully informed.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just a lot of people who are just like, wow, that sounds really different. I don't know if it would work, or, like, I can't.
Yeah. I mean, that understands
how that would work, and so I guess it's kind of hard for me to, like.
It's hard to
get everyone on board.
It's hard to understand what you haven't seen.
Sure,
that's very, like, I understand that, like, totally, and, like, I'm sure, like, we can all relate with any different subject. Like, somebody's trying to explain. I mean, I still don't understand electricity, you know, but to say that, well, it's not possible because I don't understand it is kind of a fallacy. I mean, obviously, electricity is a thing and it works and people understand it, or we wouldn't have all the things that we have. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a vast step away from what's commonly done in our culture at the moment. It is, like you said, much more prevalent in the UK. So, especially in France, apparently France has a government program, like a daycare program, but it's Montessori based. It's called Le Creche.
Nice.
Whatever. I can't speak French. I don't know how you say that word. C-R-E-C-H-E, I think. But, yeah. So apparently it's like every parent's dream for them to get into this government daycare. That's like, basically Montessori, from what I can tell. They don't call it that.
Yeah.
But it sounds a lot like it.
Yeah. It definitely is very different from, like, an American way of raising children.
And I know that because of this book I read that's called Raising BB. It's a French word for baby.
Okay.
And it's this American journalist that her boyfriend lived in France together, got married over there, and had their first child over there. So she raised her first child in France. First two children, actually, I think. They moved back eventually, I'm not sure. But anyway, she talks about the French culture and their way of raising children. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was a big learning curve for her. She tells a story of, like, this French friend that she had made, like, this woman who's, like, came over to her house and, like, she had her one-year-old, and she has, like, the American ideal of a child is that they're this wild thing that we can't control, and we just pick up after them, and they can't, like, they can't understand anything yet. But this stranger, like, comes over to her house, and, like, the baby's, like, pulling books off the shelves and, like, climbing up the shelf, and the French lady is kind of, like, correcting her and like, giving her a book and, like, just, like, showing her how to put it back. And then, like, the baby picks up a book and puts it back, and this American journalist, like, this lady's, like, well, my gosh, why did she do that? Holy crap. Because
yeah,
we have this ingrained, you know, thought of, like, babies can't do anything. And that's what I thought until I was introduced to Montessori. And, yeah, it's, like, it's totally different to think, like, they're this autonomous person. And from the very beginning, you know, they do, like, have different levels of consciousness up until, you know, adulthood, really. Like, their brain keeps changing. So
yeah, gives a lot more dignity to a child.
Yeah it was like, yeah, it was super cool,
yeah,
to read this book and, like, the difference. They also talk about eating in courses, which has to do with, you know, the family table thing. So, like, a lot of us have trouble getting our kids to eat their vegetables, but over there it's like, it's the only thing on the table is the salad comes first, right?
Uh-huh.
The antipasta. So, like, the salad comes out first and we're all eating the salad. So if they're hungry, they're probably going to take a bite. And then comes out the next course, which is usually, like, you have the vegetables and then the meat and then the bread and then the dessert. Yeah. So eating one thing at a time,
instead of a plate with, like,
everything on it and, like, this big portioned everything on it plate. Yeah. You're eating all the little bit of all the courses. That's worked really well for our family. And we have, like, I don't know if you grew up this way, but if you sat at the table till you finished your plate, right?
Right.
And, like, you had to eat everything. Well, that ended when my brother threw up his peas on the plate.
Oh, no.
For the most part. Like, I remember it. So it didn't end completely, but it wasn't as strict after that.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So
pretty dramatic.
The gag reflex is real if the taste bud is not quite developed yet. So, yeah. So, like, our rule is you have to take, if you want the next course, you have to take one bite. You just have to try it. And I think it's like three times after they try something, three times, and they actually start developing a taste for it. Like, your taste buds are developed. I mean, think about all the different, like, culturally and environmentally, think about all the different cultures across the world. And an Indian person who comes over to America is going to prefer Indian spices and, like, curry and all of that because that's what they grew up with. But, like, curry makes me want to vomit. So I didn't grow up with it, mm-hmm. You know, but they love it because they grew up with it.
Yeah.
So if you're introduced to it and you're being kept introduced to it, you're going to end up liking it. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Another thing.
More questions.
Okay.
You can crop these questions so that they flow better.
No, I can't do that. I'm not that not skilled at this yet.
Okay. Okay, there's a lot of people who will make a playroom in their house. And it sort of just seems like there's a very common notion of, like, kids' rooms are just, like, disaster. Like,
area.
Toys everywhere, total mess.
Yeah.
Don't have any expectation of, like, cleanliness or order in their room. And then, you know, maybe you can have that in their room, but, like, the playroom, you set up a playroom and then that's sort of just, like,
at least the mess stays in there.
Yeah. Like, it's just an area where they can do free for all. But it doesn't really seem Montessori to have a messy room or a playroom where they can, like,
they're free to trash it if they want.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I know that Montessori will set up like a space. This is like your workspace.
Yeah.
And then you always like put it away when you're done.
Right.
And that's part of the lesson is the setup and tear down kind of thing.
Right.
So
restoring the work.
I guess I'm just like maybe it's another American culture thing. Where,
yeah, it is.
Like,
I think it is.
We can't fathom a clean child's room.
And or a child being able to put their stuff away where it belongs. Right.
So, I don't know. Like, how do you implement cleaning up after yourself when they're playing or, you know, because I guess, there's the work of school and that's very orderly.
Yeah.
And you're doing your lessons and it's very controlled.
Right.
And like, even when you're.
And you have somebody there aware all the time watching. Like, if somebody doesn't put that away, then you have somebody there that sees that and they're going to come say, oh, I noticed that your work is out. Would you like to put that away before you begin your next work?
Mm-hmm.
And then they are free to say, oh, I was just going to the bathroom or washing my hands and I'm going back to it, whatever. Like, you know, it's not like a, you need to put that away right now. You know, they're free to, they can leave their work if they need to take care of right. physical necessities, you know, yeah. they're thirsty, they're hungry, they not hungry because they eat at the same time. Usually like everybody puts their work away and they have like a together meal. Super cool, actually. Anyways, so on the toy room thing, I've actually been wanting to do an episode on how Montessori is like, very fits
can,
in when fits
it
in with minimalism. It yeah. fits in with minimalism. So yeah. there's this like podcast lady I've been following that that kind of does this like into the whole minimalism thing. And she talked about like they had a playroom, they had a toy room, like kids' room. And it was always a disaster. And she went in one day and she just put everything in trash bags. And like left like oh, three yeah. things out. And she didn't like do it with the kids. She did it while the kids were sleeping. And she said the kids woke up the next morning and they came into the room. And they said, oh, mommy, you cleaned.
Okay.
Like that says everything to me. Like they thought it was messy too.
Yeah.
But also it was too much for them to manage themselves.
Mm.
Yeah. And that's all of like a lot of what Montessori says is don't give a child more than what they can handle. Like that's why you give a 3-year-old only 3 steps to wash their hands. And like you wouldn't give like you would give maybe a 5-year-old 6 steps to wash their hands, but not a 3-year-old. Like it was too much for them. And like American culture is a lot, whatever you want. Like, yeah, we can have that. Sure. Like we want to say yes. But then a lot of times it ends up being so much. And yeah, so, like, to me, that sense of, like, oh, like, the kids woke up and they weren't mad about their toys. Like, they were like, oh, yeah, it's clean now. Awesome, Mom. And, like, played in there for hours, where before they would only go in there for 10 minutes, she said, according to this mom. Yeah. So, yeah. So, for us, because that's kind of what you're asking, how we
yeah
do, like, their stuff, the kids' stuff at home, we only have their clothes and a few books in their room. Maybe like a couple of quiet toys that they could do in the morning without waking up their siblings because we're all bunked. So they're kind of, we have stuff in each room. Like we have two living spaces and then an office and a dining room. And their stuff is on the lower levels. So we have a few things in the living room and we have a few things in this, what we call the study, which is kind of like our school room and like work room, like the printers in there, like some bookshelves and like all of our school stuff and like our prayer space, our sacred space. And the stuff that's like super intricate that has like a lot of pieces and might need to be watched because like crazy boys like to get out of control. Like that's all on their level, but there's doors on it and it's locked until we like do work time. But then on the sides of that is other stuff that they are allowed to get into. But I'm always here. So like they have the experience of during work time, We're only allowed out one work at a time. And then when we're finished with that, we put that away and then we can get the next thing out. And I try to do that throughout the day. And sometimes, like, so it's the same. Like, a lot of times they ask me, like, I put a lot of stuff up high and, like, we'll rotate. Or a lot of stuff, it's just like, that has too many pieces and that is not going to come down and get all over my house because that might need to be, like, kind of need to watch, be around to watch. And, like, stay-at-home mom, 5 kids, I've got chores, meals to cook, like, things to do. If I know I'm busy or, like, doing something, I don't get out. Like, that's where the intricate stuff is up. And we get it down whenever I'm, like, dedicating a time to, like, I'm here in this room with the kids while they're doing stuff. Or at least, like, I know that they're doing this, so I need to be checking on them often. So that's kind of what we do. Like, I'm always constantly saying, oh, if, you know, you want to do this, did you put up your other stuff? And sometimes I'll go to cook a meal and turn around, and, yeah, the entire room is destroyed. And that is probably a result of having 5 children under the age of 7, like, and boys, like, they feed off of each other and everything escalates very, very rapidly. Like, they have to top each other. I don't know what it is, but, yeah. So in that case, it's like, I have a keyword and I say, okay, we're going to clear the floor. Like, we're clearing the floor. And with the younger ones, like the 3 and 4 year old, like, you have to be doing it with them. And if they're not doing it, it's like I pick up stuff and hand it to them and say, where does this go? And they will put it away. Like, sometimes, like, yeah, that's life. They have a hard time getting motivated. That's life at home. Like, so that's the difference between, I feel like, a school in an in-home setting is it's not as controlled and they have more autonomy. And somebody's not watching all the time. Because there's 5 other kids to take care of in an entire household. So, yeah, like, we'll clear the floor and we'll do it together. And, like, they may want to do something else or go outside. I'm like, yeah, you can go outside and do that thing that you want to do when the house is clean, like, when this floor is clean. And this is what we're doing right now. So,
So do they have toys outside of the learning materials for Montessori?
Yeah. We have toy soldiers and dinosaurs. Bucket of dinosaurs. Most of it's hand. The toy soldiers, I think I got for them for Christmas.
Or Do you keep it in the school room then?
Yeah, it's on the school room.
Okay.
Shell, like I said. So that's stuff that they can do when they're not doing schoolwork. Mm-hmm. I mean, not everything's schoolwork appropriate. Right. Like, they're. But at least if it's like imaginary play or whatever, which I say imaginary play in quote, they don't actually like make up stuff, like have an imagination till they get past 6. Like, if they're doing anything before then, like, you're like, oh, they're pretending or they're like playing these roles, like, that is what it is. It's role playing. They don't, like, they're still getting a grasp on this reality, like, this world we live in. They actually, like, can't do abstract thinking until they get past 6. Like, their brains can't do it. Their brains do not function that way. So, like, any abstract thoughts or ideas are not going to be able to understand. So if you hear them like, oh, they're playing this part, whatever, like, they have seen that somewhere. Or they are just replaying it, trying to process life. Like, if you had a funeral recently, like, they might be having a funeral for their baby doll or for this dinosaur that died in a battle. Because they've seen battles on TV, you know, like, it's all role playing. But Montessori aside, that's a side note. That's probably a whole nother podcast I actually want to do. So
I would be curious about that.
That's like literally the next one I want to do.
Because I have heard a lot of things about like imagination and creativity and it's really confusing to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So next. Okay. That's another subject. That's teaser, a whole
teaser
can
for
of worms.
A future podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of what we do with their toys. They have toys. We're normal people in that way. They have stuff. Their aunts shower them with gifts, and we have those things.
How do you control how many toys they have? If especially if you're, like, being gifted them all the time.
We only have a certain amount of shelves and space, and if it doesn't fit on the shelves, it doesn't come out. Or, like, Christmas, we literally came home with a, like, trunk full of toys. Like, we have a big Yukon XL. Like, it was full of toys. So before any of those toys came out of the box, I went through the whole house and literally, like, put everything in bags. Like, it either went to donation or it went in the attic for, like, a younger child at a different time or, like, another season. And then we, like, then I brought all the toys out of the box and, like, put them in appropriate places. And the big thing about Montessori is that once you put something somewhere, you need to keep it there. Because the kids have visual memory, they will be able to, they know where it goes. So she suggested you only really, like, change your house once a year, like, physically, like, if you have to rearrange, like, do it all at once and do it once a year. Because, like, the kids will orient themselves to this environment and, like, they know where everything is. But if you change it, it's just like an adult, like, husband comes home and, like, the wife has, like, moved the entire pantry. And he's like, where's the potato chips? And she's like, I moved them. And he's like, well, I don't know where they are. Like, you didn't tell me. Like, where are they? Like, yeah. I'm freaking out because my favorite show is on. I don't have my potato chips and I need to relax. You know, like, same way with kids.
That's kind interesting of. Scenario.
Yeah, you know.
I'm wondering if that's real life or made up scenario.
I mean, we've had some fights like that. I freak out. If somebody has moved something, I can't find it and I need it right now.
Oh, are you the husband that watches the husband. The potato chips?
Yeah, you know, I could change that around.
Your favorite show is on. That. Where is the potato chips? Yeah,
well, and it's more like chocolate. Where is my ice cream?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
So, especially with like a house full of kids for me, it's like somebody is screaming like they're dying and I can't find what I need to take care of them. And I'm freaking out too.
Yeah. You because gotta know where it is.
I can't get this child to stop screaming right now and everything's not okay. Yeah.
That would be hard for me because I love to rearrange things. I get like so bored with like orientation of things, like bedroom, kitchen.
It can always be done better.
Anything. I just like get bored and I want to change it up.
I mean, well, that's probably the reason I've been couldn't find Kateri's pajamas tonight because I just recently like changed her dresser, her like clothes area out of our room into the other room. And like, it's a different dresser and like the clothes are different places. And so, yeah, he can't find stuff a lot of times because I'm like, yeah, I'm rearranging a lot. But it's okay because I'm at home and I know where things are. And this is like where I am 24/7.
Sure.
So
you need it to work for you.
Yeah. When he's like, does his office stuff, he's very particular also about like where stuff is and knowing where it is. Mm. So I think it's just, yeah, maybe it's a control thing.
Yeah. It's the toaster with my husband. He wants the toaster out at all times. And if ever I try and put it away in like one of the cabinets, he's like, where is the toaster? like, I just put it away. No, we have to keep it out.
Yeah.
It has to be like
so that thing makes him feel secure that he knows where that toaster is and he can get food.
I guess.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think we're not even using the toaster that often.
It probably has an emotional tie.
Maybe. Never thought about it. Maybe I'll ask him.
Yeah.
How does it make you feel when the toaster is absent?
Yeah. I'm that way about my phone charger.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think it's like a mother instinct thing. Like, because if my phone's going to die and like I need you or a child slits their head open and like I'm at home alone with five kids and like I can't get them all in the car to get my child to the emergency room. And like my brain's like starts going crazy. Like, this is my lifeline and I need this to like work. Yeah. Out of all the things in the world, this is what I need. Because we don't have a landline. Yeah. We have, like, everything's cell phones. Like, sure. We only have cell phones. Like, that's my tie to the outside world.
You have to be able to communicate with other people.
At least here, like, I have neighbors that work from home. Oh, nice. So in this neighborhood, like, I have somebody. I guess I did in the last neighborhood I lived. I had a good friend right next door. I had Kelly. But here, she's two doors down. So I've got something, but it still freaks me out.
You had to run to the neighbor.
Yeah, if I had to run to the neighbor before a child bled out on the floor. Which head injuries, man, there's a lot of blood.
Does it happen that often?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Like, scenario of you needing to like call and go to the emergency
room? At least, well, so we have learned how to take care of minor major injuries. Because the emergency room is quite traumatizing in itself.
Oh, yeah.
So it happens, yeah. Noah, twice this year.
Oh my gosh.
With his head. He had like an inch long laceration.
What did you do?
Butterfly stitches fixed.
You did it?
Most things. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
It was steel.
It's a straight line cut. If it's in a straight line, you can do it. Now, if it's like jagged and it's got a bunch of pieces, you're going to need a surgeon for that.
Sometimes I feel convicted to become a nurse just for my
family.
So
you can handle. You will have that qualification by the time this boy gets to be 5 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, oh, I've done a lot. I've had to pull a rock out of the inside of a knee. And
ooh.
Yeah.
Did you reset any
two
bones?
Two or three. Not yet. I've had no dislocations or broken bones yet. Luckily. I don't know why. I never broke a bone either. I don't know how to handle broken bones.
What about
that? I might throw up and pass out.
Injuries.
Eye injuries.
Or mouth.
Dominic knocked his teeth in.
Oh.
Yeah. We had to go to the dentist for that.
I feel like you can't really do that one at home.
No. No, it was bad. It was real swollen. It was not. Yeah, I'm glad I had. And my uncle's a dentist. And we happened to be in my hometown when it happened. So he was like, yeah, took care. He was awesome. Took care of it. Got us right in. But yeah, that. What else? Definitely mouth. So Elijah cut the corner of his mouth, like right above this meeting of the lips, like right above there. And we tried to do butterfly stitches, but he kept like picking it off. And like, what do you do? Like, you can't, it's really hard to stitch where places like move and meet. Like,
yeah.
A lot of doctors won't do it. Like, they'll just try to do like super glue. And like, we tried to super glue it. Anyways, it healed. You can't see it's there anymore. But
man, you are a tough mom. I'm so queasy about that kind of stuff. I guess I'll learn.
Well, so the first time that ever happened is kind of what taught us, because our first tripped on a rug, hit his head on like the space heater that's like kind of also like a coffee table. And yeah, like inch long laceration. And so we take him to the ER. The ER is like 2 hours wait. So we're like, okay, let's just try an urgent care. And their urgent care is like, we don't really take people under 2 years old. And they're like, we're about to close. And we're like, well, it's just a cut. Like,
yeah,
seriously, like there's nothing else wrong with him. Like, if you can do it on an adult, you can do it on a kid. And like, there's nobody here. There's literally nobody here. It's just us. And like, you're trying to take us back to the emergency room. It's going to be 2 hours wait just to get in.
Right.
And anyway, so he took us in, and then they poked him like three or four different times with this needle with lidocaine. And then it was still like, Edmund's trying to hold him down and he's screaming bloody murder. And like, Edmund's trying not to just start bawling too. And like, because they're like sticking him in his head like three or four different times, first of all. And then he's trying to like stitch it. And with like this wiggling child, and like doesn't get it the first time, tries to do it again, finally like gets it all done. And then like we get Ignatius set up and calmed down. He's like, you know, that the doctor says, you know, I really could have used 2 stitches. And we're like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, it took all this just to get 1 stitch in. And now you're telling us like, now we're like, you know what? We're good.
Yeah.
I think we're set. And like,
we can't deal with this.
Yeah, we can't do this again. He's not bleeding anymore. It's pretty much together. We're leaving. And that's the last time we've been to an
emergency. Yeah. Like, we could do the same thing at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So we have learned that butterfly stitches from Walgreens are amazing.
You just buy.
Yeah, the good kind that stick really well. Yeah, we've got them on hand at all times.
Wow.
I've got like 10 different Band-Aids. I can really bandage somebody up.
Wow, that's amazing.
So yeah, Dominic actually, with a pitchfork, sliced the web of his toes between his big toe and his second toe.
Oh.
Yeah, it was. You could see a lot in there. It was pretty wide. And I was like, buddy, you know what? They can't stitch this with a... Sorry.
What did you do? You buddy taped the two?
I taped his toes together and I sat him on the Lazy Boy and put his foot up and he stayed there for 2 or 3 days.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
And then it was fine. You can't even see a scar. It healed up really well. Actually, yeah, better than any other wound yet. So,
wow.
There's a lot. There's a lot you can do. Just the internet's a lot of help too.
Yeah. YouTube.
Yeah, you can't really stitch. Moving parts are hard to stitch. Just,
oh my gosh.
That's the biggest.
I'm just gonna have to bring my kids over here. I can't do it.
I mean, I just I kind of grew up with this too, because my uncle's a dentist, so he's got the lidocaine, he's got all the stuff. He pierced my ears, actually.
Oh really?
Yeah, probably shouldn't say that, but yeah, he pierced my ears with a 13 gauge needle or something, one of the big ones he happened to have on hand. We were doing dental work and they had just been infected. So I had to let him grow in from going to the jewelry place and getting him done. I think I was 12 and I was high on laughing gas. And he's like, well, do you want to pierce your ears? And I was like, I guess I'll. Agreed. And my mom was like, well, sure, you're gonna save me a trip however having to do that. So he
he had in the office, hey, let me just stab you real quick.
Yeah, if he gets an injury at home from his farm, he'll stitch it, look in the mirror and stitch it up.
That's hardcore. I'm such a baby. I'm horrified by all these stories.
Well, I grew up with 30 cousins, and most of them, so my dad's oldest of 11, and most of them were boys. I think there's 7 of us girls out of 30 cousins.
Wow.
And I'm pretty sure I have those numbers right. And my aunt is probably going to text me after I release this and say, that's not right.
Count your cousins again.
Yeah. So that's about right. The ratios are right, I'm pretty sure. And yeah, so there was a lot of injuries, and we would have week-long family reunions at the lake, and lot of injuries. And so we dealt with I've got an uncle that's a doctor, a couple a nurse practitioner aunt, another nurse aunt, and then my uncle the dentist. We had everybody on hand. We had minor surgery several times.
Wow.
There at the camp.
Such a good pool of resources.
Yeah, seriously. We could start a commune and have everything we need, I think.
Amazing.
We don't really have a farmer. We need a farmer. We need somebody to be able to feed us.
Yeah. And then you're set.
We've got ranchers. Some of us have cows, but not.
What about electrician? Nobody
that can really plant. Well, not per se. One of my uncles is not an electrician, but he can do a lot.
Handyman stuff.
Yeah.
That's very useful too.
Yeah. And plumbing is easy. It's just pipes, right?
No.
Just fitting pipes together.
I don't think it's so. I think it's a lot more complicated than that. I would not DIY plumbing. Even in a commune. I wouldn't do it.
Really?
No. I don't understand that at all.
It's really easy. It's literally just fitting pipes together and sealing them out in water, gas, whatever.
Wow.
I've put my own sink in. It's doable. They come in kits with instructions. No?
I don't know. I don't know.
Minor stuff. Minor stuff you can do.
Maybe when I'm older.
An entire house, that's something different.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad we found some common ground. I wasn't giving up.
Admit it. Plumbing is easy. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Any other questions now that we're on plumbing?
Yeah, I don't really have any plumbing Montessori questions, but I have lots of good things to think about.
Okay.
And I'm sure as I go along in parenting and in life, I'll find things that work for me and work for our family. And
I mean, that's the thing is I really do believe that there's not a set one thing. There are good things There's good parts of everything. Like, you can always find the good in something, right? I feel like Montessori has a lot of good, like most, probably 99% good. So, like, that's why I feel so sure about her methodology and, like, everything that she's observed about child psychology just from experience. And a lot, like, they're all the research that's coming out now, like, now that they can do brain scans, that a lot of it is backed by modern day research now. Like, the stuff that she observed before any of that technology was available. Wow. So, yeah, that's, I think that book that they talk about that a lot is called Montessori, the Science Behind the Method, or, like, Okay, I have to look that up now. I have to look that one up. That's going
to
bother me.
Don't forget to link it.
We can't link it. And it will be linked in the show notes.
All resources made available to you at a later date.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Quick. Montessori, the Science Behind the Genius. Pretty sure that one's it. Yep. In this compelling case for the Montessori method, this resource explains a correlation between contemporary research-based educational theory and Dr. Montessori's observation-based insights into human learning and development. So, contains updated information and research on pretend play, as well as new research on organized classrooms, sensory discrimination, intelligence, epigenetics, and the Goldilocks effect, whatever that is. I have not read this book, but yeah, they talk about a lot of the modern day research that.
Who's it by?
Shoot. It's a really, really good question. You have great questions. I should have you on here all the time. Like, Angeline S. Lillard, PhD. Okay.
Well, if she has a PhD, then it's legit.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's all the qualifications you need
for anything.
Yeah. Doctor.
I have a PhD in electricity, but I can do plumbing.
Wow. Amazing. You're just a do-it-all mom. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast, Katie.
Thanks for answering my random questions.
This was awesome. No, I hope that
it's good to be affirmed in choosing Montessori.
Yeah.
When it's countercultural a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and I think everybody thinks that it's like, if you saying that you do this and like that's all you're going to do and you're never going to like there is a marriage of different ideas and Montessori, like kind of like what you said about the baby table and then eating like dinner at the baby table. It's like, well, there's three different meals in a day. Like they can eat at that at any time. And you can still have a family meal together, but they can still have that experience of sitting up on their own and eating off their own plate in a cup and like having this, their own balance in this small chair that they fit in this small cup and being able to be allowed to like spill it and see the effects of that and try to like make it to their mouth without spilling it and start learning how to drink out of a cup, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know. Have experience, be allowed to make mistakes and start on like becoming independent. Yeah. So I think that's a lot of where the pushback comes from. Like, oh my gosh. So like we can't do anything with you because you chose this different thing. It's like, no, we can still do stuff. Like,
yeah.
This doesn't have to be 24/7. And we'll still watch movies with you. Yeah. We can still go to the movies. And eat popcorn.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's, I feel like a lot of that's tribal too. You know, you probably don't know what I'm talking about. Man. Like
Montessori is tribal?
No, like just the whole, like if you're going to be different from me, then like we can't, like we're
that like separates not the same us. Culture or tribe.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that separates us. You know, like tribally separates us, like it's like an emotional break or something, which has its historical background, but
That's really interesting.
That's another thing. That's a Edmund podcast. What's that podcast, babe? He's not even listening. He has his own headphones on over there.
In his own world.
He is. So there's this book called Supernatural Selection, How Religion Evolved by Matt J. Rossano. And it talks about kind of how we evolved in like this tribal nature that we have in our in our social life and human sociality. So actually, Edmund has a podcast on that. I will link it below so wow, you can listen
so
to that.
So many links.
And maybe that will help us understand maybe why we react so emotionally to things that are different than what like we've chosen. Like I really like it has this background in natural selection, and
that's really interesting.
Yeah,
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a good listen. It's definitely mind bending. So, from a man that has a PhD, Dr. Matt Rossano. Yeah, he does says like he does anthropology. Apparently, I think maybe I have that right. Might have it wrong. It's been a few months since I've listened to that podcast, and he was over here, but super nice guy. Who, him and his wife homeschooled their children.
Fun fact.
Learn that. So, anyways. Well, thanks for coming on, Katie.
And thanks for having me.
Guys, thanks for listening and hope this was helpful, especially if you have a newborn on the way or you've never encountered Montessori before in real life and had a lot of questions. So, because apparently I'm really bad.
No. It's just so complicated, you know?
It's very in-depth.
Yeah.
It is so in-depth.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And maybe that's why I like it so much, is because there's so much detail and like you can do it a little bit or you can do it a lot. And like, it's still good. Like however much of it you do, like you're getting that goodness of it, however much you can handle, you know, like, yeah. So thanks for listening, guys. And hope you're having a good day.